Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this hour we get to talk about Leo, Toby, Josh, CJ, President Bartlett. Those of you who are fans know what I'm talking about, and if you don't recognize what I'm talking about, this will bring you right there. The show, of course, West Wing, and there were many a fan who love politics who missed that show being on the air. An article in the recent issue of Vanity Fair caught my attention because it is about West Wing and West Wing babies. Julie Wiener, a blogger and contributing writer for Vanity Fair, says that there are a whole number of young people who were inspired by this program. The way that it showed us how people work in the West Wing and the dialogue and the interaction and an idealism that inspired a number of people to become policy wonks. And many of those people are advising top politicians now or who are very influential in writing about the current political scene. I never thought about that angle of West Wing. I really thought it was a terrific show when I watched about 6 episodes over the weekend. I had an exciting weekend. My dog and I sat there and we watched West Wing hour after hour after hour. It was quite fun. Our guest writes that President Obama is credited with inspiring political idealism in young people, unless at least until the campaign ended and the governing began. But before there was Obama, there was Aaron Sorkin, and President Bartlett. This series ran for 6 years. It's been off the air for a number of years. But our guest writes about the number of people who grew up in the early part of the last decade worshiping the cool technocratic charm of Sorkin's characters, who have today matured into the young policy prodigies and press operatives who advise, brief, and excuse the behavior of the most powerful people in the country. There, I'm sure, are some of you listening who were fans of West Wing and saw many of the shows. And we've had other political shows. There's going to be an HBO show, Veep, that will start in April. Game Change, I had a chance to see that with Julianna Moore on Saturday night about Sarah Palin. And there have been The Ides of March, some other movies that have come out. I'm always attracted to watching all of those because I love political dramas. So this was a show that I was hooked on and saw many, many of the episodes, and I'm sure you did as well. Julie Wiener is our guest this hour. Julie, thank you so much for writing about West Wing so I could talk about it on the radio and see many of the shows again. I had the best time over the weekend. I forgot how well done that show was. It really was a great show.
I know. It's funny that you say that you had to keep watching episode after episode, because when I was going through the series during my research for the article, I probably watched 8 episodes a day. I did not have much of a social life. It's just impossible to stop watching.
And all the names you remembered. Oh, it was so good to see Toby again. And there was CJ and how fantastic she was. But I never thought that it really would have inspired a number of people to become policy wonks, to go into politics. And indeed it did.
I mean, I think before the West Wing, there was a real consensus that Washington was very cynical and Washington was boring and politics was sort of something that you did if you, I don't know, it wasn't very exciting and it wasn't for idealistic people trying to change the world. But the West Wing really showed people who deeply cared about the things that they were working on, who really tried to do the best for the constituents that they were representing. There was very little cynical deal making and sort of legislative bickering. It was people really trying to do the best thing that they thought would benefit the country.
Yeah. Do you think that it was accurate at all when you interviewed young people who are working in the White House or working in Washington now? Was it an accurate portrayal of what life is like, or was it a lot sexier, a lot more fast paced than it actually is?
Oh, definitely sexier and fast-paced. Definitely. I mean, you would talk to people and even things like the hallways weren't as wide and didn't have as high ceilings in the West Wing. Things like that, too. There was a great interview in the New York Times a couple of months ago with Cal Penn, the star of the Harold and Kumar movies, who actually worked for President Obama. And he was working late one night and suggested that everyone order Chinese food. And they said, wait, we can't order Chinese food. It's 11 o'clock at night. And he said, oh, well, they did it on the West Wing. Things like that, too. I think, like, larger things, obviously, I don't think as many people lower in, down the totem pole have as much face time with the president as a lot of young people did on the West Wing. But in other senses, it really was very accurate in sort of the political culture that really permeates all parts of these people's lives from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed. It's socializing, eating, thinking about politics and how to serve the president. And they're all very earnest about it in the way that real policy prodigies are very earnest about it.
Yeah. Some of them are so earnest that they just sleep in their rooms in the White House, right? I mean, in their at their desks, they fall asleep.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they sleep on their couches. They all have couches. They when they wake up at 5 in the morning to go exercising, and they're checking their Blackberries. They're checking their Blackberries on the commute. It's interesting. In the West Wing, they don't have Blackberries, which is sort of a now I think the Blackberry is so inseparable from people's idea of Washington policymakers, but on the West Wing, they're just obsessively on their cell phones. but they're always in touch.
Right, always in touch. They are really in touch, aren't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to watch maybe 6 of the episodes I watched over the weekend, maybe even more than that. The number of, and this was some years ago now, I was looking at the early seasons, issues like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a Hispanic on the Supreme Court, white supremacy groups, interracial dating. First, they dealt with a lot of those issues, and they're still issues that are pertinent right now. And they did them in an intricate fashion. It wasn't just, let's bring this up. It was discussed in detail.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A bunch of people I talked to said that when they were interested in politics, they would watch these episodes and take notes as they were watching and look up all the acronyms they use later, like DOJ, Department of Justice. It was really very realistic, and I think that's partly because, actually entirely because, Aaron Sorkin hired real-life Washington, D.C. consultants like D.D. Myers to advise him on the show, and she would say that this is how this works and this is how people really speak, and they really did their research, so things are very realistic.
Mm-hmm. How was it able to enjoy success for so many years? Was it 6 years on the air?
It was 6 years on the air. I would contend that the last couple seasons when Sorkin left were not great, but the first 4 years with Sorkin were just phenomenal. I think because there's such like a richness of topics. I mean, from the campaign to actually governing to President Bartlet's personal life to all the personal lives of his staffers, there's just a very large cast of characters and whose, you know, problems and goals affect like every, far reaching aspect of American life.
Mm-hmm. And was it a hit? Was it a hit the first 4 years and not the last 2 years? Or did it just have an acceptable audience?
That's just my personal opinion. And actually, if you talk to people, there's a definite drop-off, I think, from season 4 to season 5, where it was post-Sorkin era. And no one writes dialogue like Sorkin does. He's
right.
Just a genius. He's so pithy and witty, but also intelligent and... there's still a very popular Twitter page that just posts quotes from different Aaron Sorkin shows, Sorkinese. It was tweeting a lot at me this week. People just can't get enough of the way he talks.
The West Wing, one of the staffers you interviewed who has been with Obama since the campaign, said the West Wing was idealistic, and so were we. Everyone hoped that politics would be like that. It does capture a kind of idealism that gets smashed in some of the episodes of the show, but it does capture an underlying idealism.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all the people who went and worked for President Bartlet did so for the right reasons, in the same way that the people who went and worked for Obama did so for the right reasons. Everyone I talked to, I mean, it wasn't cynical or I'm going to get a high-profile job in the administration so I can leave after 4 years and get paid $1 million a year working on K Street as a consultant. It was really people who very much believe in the candidate. I mean, your whole life, it becomes about this person's needs. I think it would be increasingly difficult to do if you didn't really believe in what you're doing. And the characters in the show make all kinds of sacrifices in the same way that I'm sure real political advisors make sacrifices. One episode that comes to mind is CJ, the press secretary, not being able to spend as much time with her father, who's suffering from Alzheimer's.
Yes.
because of her job. It's very sad, but those kinds of sacrifices are ones that, you know, real political advisors make, I'm sure, all the time.
She was a beautifully drawn character in that. She was very captivating. She's a good actress,
yeah.
Isn't she?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of the women I talked to said that she was such a strong role model. I mean, she was unmarried, but it wasn't a subject of mockery or pity. She was just very good at her job, and she had a romantic life, but it didn't take, you know, center stage in her life. She was really committed to what she was doing. She was a really strong female character in the presence of, you know, 8 very, very strong male characters who really held her own, and a lot of women found that inspiring that I talked to, especially, you know, people who became press secretaries now sort of learned how to work the press room from CJ.
Oh my gosh, that's really saying something for a TV show, isn't it?
I know, it's kind of sad. Yeah.
Wow. We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Julie Wiener is a blogger and contributing writer for Vanity Fair, and she talks about the legacy of West Wing, the West Wing babies, and interviewed a number of people who were staffers in the White House, or they are working as political bloggers. Some have gone on to be commentators. They were just captivated. And it's interesting to me to be watching some of these chat shows where they're talking about politics, and reference will be made still 6 years after it's off the air to President Bartlet or to things that happened in West Wing. They're also, just to bring this a little more up to date, HBO did a piece, a 2-hour film on Sarah Palin that aired on Saturday. Some of you may have had a chance to see that, or you may want to reference some of the other political dramas that have taken place, be they movies or I can't think of many other television shows, but maybe there have been some of those, and how they, maybe not to the extent that West Wing did, may inspire people to become more politically aware. I must say that I was a big fan of this show, and it was great fun to see some of the episodes again in preparation for this. Not a hard homework assignment, huh? 800-486-8655. We're going to, if you want to set up this piece, we're going to play a couple clips from the show. Losing Texas. There was reference made in a couple of the shows that I saw about how they lost Texas twice. Do we need to set this up, do you think, or not, Julie?
What clip is this?
I think it's a conversation about their losing Texas. It was one of the early episodes, and they're always thinking about re-election because everybody always does, and what the real reasons were for losing Texas. So we'll just play it, okay?
Okay.
All right,
okay.
We'll just play it.
What else?
The Ryder Cup team is declining our invitation to come to the White House.
You're kidding.
Because of the joke.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
The Ryder Cup team?
It's a group of the best golfers in the country.
I know what the Ryder Cup team is. Thanks, Mrs. Lanningham.
Sir, this may be a good time to talk about your sense of humor.
I've got an intelligence briefing, a security briefing, and a 90-minute budget meeting all scheduled for the same 45 minutes. You sure this is a good time to talk about my sense of humor?
No.
Me neither.
What else?
It's just that it's not the first time it's happened.
I know.
Talking about Texas, sir?
I know.
USA Today asks you why you don't spend more time campaigning in Texas, and you say it's because you don't look good in funny hats.
It was big hats.
What difference does it make?
It makes a difference.
The point is, we got whomped in Texas.
We got whomped in Texas twice.
We got whomped in the primary, and we got whomped in November.
I think I was there.
And it was avoidable. Sir.
CJ, on your tombstone, it's going to read post hoc ergo propter hoc.
Okay, but none of my visitors are going to be able to understand my tombstone.
27 lawyers in the room. Anybody know post hoc ergo propter hoc? Josh?
Post after hoc ergo therefore. After hoc, therefore, something else hoc.
Thank you. Next.
If I got more credit on the 443.
Leo.
After it, therefore, because of it.
After it, therefore, because of it. It means one thing follows the other, therefore it was caused by the other. But it's not always true. In fact, it's hardly ever true. We did not lose Texas because of the hat joke. Do you know when we lost Texas?
When you learned to speak Latin.
Go figure.
The West Wing, one of the early shows. And a president who speaks Latin, huh?
I know.
We'll welcome phone calls and we'll take them in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to some phone calls now for Julie Wiener, blogger, contributing writer for Vanity Fair, and it's her article that is the reason that we're talking about this. West Wing Babies, appearing in the April 2012 issue. Georgia is our first caller. Hi, Georgia.
Hi. I've been listening avidly once I heard what you were having on, because, and as soon as you started saying six seasons, I have to correct that. There were seven seasons, and I have full set in a box right here. I went and checked. I said I was sure there were seven. And I do occasionally love it when I can start with season one and go right straight through. It takes many evenings, but I love it.
So you've seen it more than once. You've seen the show.
Oh, good heavens. I saw the whole show on TV. I don't think I ever missed it. And I have, of course, as I said, a complete box set from season one through season seven.
Why do you love it?
I don't know. I think it was the conversations. They were so realistic. People talk over each other. People interrupt each other. And they don't, you know, stop time so someone can have a little laugh track in there. It was just, Aaron Sorkin is a terrific writer. It's just too bad he had so many problems. But American President, he wrote the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what gave him the whole idea. Hmm. In fact, Martin Sheen was in that movie, and so was Michael J. Fox. And I just think they continued on. I've been a movie buff for many, many years, and I have a son who also is one, so when there's something that's really, really good, he'll just up and send me the whole set on DVD.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it is. It is. I never could have bought the set. I did have a couple, you know, in the beginning, but...
Yeah, I asked for it for a Christmas present for my husband some years ago, and he came through.
Oh, that's how I got it, too. It
was Did you? All right. It's worth seeing again.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, golly. Yeah. About every 2 years, I watch the entire thing. Cause I even like Jimmy Smith, so it worked out really well.
Thank you, Georgia, very much. I didn't mean to misspeak. It was seven seasons. I thought it was six.
Yes. Yes, I totally. Thank you so much.
Yeah, seven seasons. The guy who I've always loved in this was Leo. I thought Leo was a guy of great substance and some personal issues that he brought, and just a complex relationship with the president, long-time relationship, 40 years. I really liked him in that show.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was really compelling, and it was so sad they you know, wrote him off because the actor who played Leo died.
Right.
And election night, when Jimmy Smith, I'm sorry, I have to sneeze.
Oh, sorry. Bless you. Bless you. That's such a little sneeze.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
Sorry. I'm sorry. They won election night, but Leo had a heart attack, and he had a heart attack once before, so it was very eerie foreshadowing on the show that the character had a heart attack and then the actor actually had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
But Leo and the president go way back. Actually, a lot of people from the president's life he knew very early on. Mrs. Landinghouse, his secretary, who was his teacher at prep school, and was credited with, you know, inspiring him to go on to greatness. So I love the fact that all the characters have this really rich history together.
The other thing that Sorkin did, and I think that too many people underestimate their audience, he must have thought that the audience was smart and could keep track of multiple events going on at the same time in rapid-fire dialogue. You had to pay attention to that show to keep up with each hour.
He really did. He very much flattered his readers, or excuse me, Eastman Magazine speak, he flattered his viewers in that if maybe you didn't understand something, surely someone that you're watching with understood something. And as the characters learned about things, you learned. Actually, he was very good about having someone in the room not understand what all the other characters were talking about. So if they were talking about the way the census worked, CJ, the press secretary, for instance, did not understand how the census worked or what its importance was. So it was sort of a clever, let's explain to CJ how the census worked so that we also explain to the audience how the census worked. And he did that very lightly and subtly, so you were never offended and you learned as the characters learned.
Yes, yeah. Thanks, Georgia, for your call. Trevor in Milwaukee. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, how are you?
Good. I was just kind of inspired by your last caller's comment about the witty dialogue on The West Wing. And you'd mentioned earlier about other shows that we were inspired by. You know, I'm a younger person. I live in Milwaukee, and I was really inspired growing up by The West Wing, or not The West Wing, I'm sorry, by The Practice. And The Practice, to me, has some of the wittiest and smartest dialogue on television, and to this day even, and really reminds me a lot of the way that The West Wing was done. I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
And tell me about The Practice. I'm not familiar with it.
Me either.
I want to watch it now, though.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, neither of you have seen it?
No.
It's a show about a bunch of lawyers. I think they're based in New York City, and they took on any kind of case, and it was a show that was based mainly in the courtroom and just outside the courtroom in the halls in the workplace, not much at home. And it was just really, really witty dialogue, really deep. It didn't pander to dumb viewers. It really required you to think and understand legal system more, and that's why it reminded me of The West Wing, because you don't get that inside view a lot of times. That's exactly what The Practice did for me and really inspired me to kind of take notice of United States law.
It's not on the air anymore, Trevor?
No, it is. It actually had a spinoff, which was Boston Legal with William Shatner.
Oh, okay.
So, and that show just ended recently, and one of my favorite actors of all time is on that show. I can't remember his name, though, but yeah. So, and that's all I wanted to say. So.
Thanks for the call. The Practice. Well, I guess we'll have to look that up.
Yeah. My first thought was The West Wing is like ER, in that I think a lot of people who are interested in medicine and interested in the inner workings of an emergency room used to love watching ER, the way the doctors talked to each other and used all their lingo in the same way that The West Wing does. But The Practice, yeah, I guess that too.
We're going to play another episode, not an episode, we'd have to play it for an hour. This is, and I found this interesting because it was an issue that we dealt with long after this show went off the air. This is one of the issues that was dealt with in an episode that I saw over the weekend that was examining the don't ask, don't tell policy. And here's how it was dealt with on West Wing.
Hang on.
I'm saying.
Hang on. A lot of those cases.
In this report, by the way.
The report.
No, I'm saying.
We read. We know the report.
We know the report. A lot of those cases you're talking about of the gays being discharged came from voluntary statements.
And a lot of these are not voluntary statements. Not by any definition given by any civilian court in this country. It is not a voluntary statement when it's given to a psychotherapist, as in the case of former Marine Corporal David Blessing. It is not a voluntary statement when it's made in a personal diary, as in the case of former West Point cadet Nicole Garrison. It is not when it's made after being asked, as in the case of Master Chief Petty Officer Diane Kelly. And it is not when it is coerced out of a service member through fear, through intimidation, through death threats, and threats of criminal prosecution, as in the case of former Air Force Major Bob Kittis, former Marine Gunnery Sergeant Kevin Keyes, and four sailors aboard the USS Essex.
Sam, you take care of your guys, we'll take care of ours.
You're not taking care of your guys, Major. Your guys are out looking for jobs.
Those weren't our guys.
Oh, my God.
Attention!
Good afternoon, Sam.
Mr. Chairman.
Congressman.
How do you do, Admiral?
Good to see you again, kid. We haven't met.
Mike Satchel.
From Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Percy Fitzwallace.
It's an honor to meet you, Admiral.
I imagine it would be, yes.
Major Tate, Major Thompson, this is Chairman Fitzwallace.
They're not going to speak until I speak to them, Sam. They're pretty well trained. Stand easy, fellas. Is this Danish for anybody?
Oh, yes, sir.
Thank you. We're discussing gays in the military, huh?
Yes, sir.
What do you think? I said, what do you think?
Sir, we're here to help the White House form a policy.
I know. I'm asking you what you think.
Sir, we're not prejudiced toward homosexuals.
You just don't want to see them serving in the armed forces.
No, sir, I don't.
Because they pose a threat to unit discipline and cohesion.
Yes, sir.
That's what I think, too. I also think the military wasn't designed to be an instrument of social change.
Yes, sir.
Problem with that is, that's what they were saying about me 50 years ago. Blacks shouldn't serve with whites. It would disrupt the unit. You know what? It did disrupt the unit. The unit got over it. The unit changed. I'm an admiral in the U.S. Navy and chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Beat that with a stick. We'll see you, Ken.
The chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who makes his point, and I watched that episode over the weekend. It's one of the issues that became a focal point in discussion between Leo and the president when Leo was telling the president he had to really start taking a stand on issues and kind of move off the middle if he were going to have a presidency that meant anything at all. I'm sorry, Julie.
Obama could maybe use that advice.
Perhaps he's been accused of being work in the middle, right?
Right, yeah. I think a lot of people on both sides are disappointed, well, especially progressives that supported him early on in the election are disappointed that he seems to be hemming and hawing on centrist positions and not following up with a lot of his campaign promises. And was that episode Let Bartlett Be Bartlett?
Yes.
Yes, it's a great episode. It's great. I'm glad you played that clip.
Yeah, it was a good discussion. Now, tell me more about the people you interviewed for this article. You talk about the show's ability to pull optimistic young people into politics and how remarkable that was. Who did it do that for, Julie?
It did it for kids who are now in their 20s and 30s who grew up watching the show in high school and college and sort of were always interested in politics, but a lot of the people that I talked to did not really realize the extent of jobs in politics that you could do without being elected to. A person that I talked to, Kurt Bardella, who works now with Congressman Daryl Issa, would say to his parents, friends, you know, I want to be in politics. And they used to think it was something that you had to get elected for, you had to run for, like a president. But there are so many behind-the-scenes things that you can do. And the West Wing was, of course, the president was the main actor in the show, and it sort of revolved around him. There were a lot of other storylines about the interpersonal relationships between his staff that had nothing to do with the president, really. And I think that was inspiring for people who maybe don't want to be the center of attention, aren't, you know, good public speakers, but still want to serve their country.
Here's an email that's come in from Lisa. My 17-year-old son received season 1 through 3 for a holiday gift, and what a gift! We've watched the program together, discussed and argued over the topics and controversies and portrayals. It has helped him understand government and become passionately interested in both social studies and history in high school, and it has provided common ground for a 17-year-old to talk with his mother. Whoa, that's
wow.
Accomplishing a lot. It does do that. It is that kind of show, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there are so many topics that come up that even people working in the same Oval Office don't agree on. So there are things to talk about with people whose positions you usually agree with. If you're a Republican watching with a Democrat, there'll be lots to talk about. If you're two like-minded people, there'll be lots to talk about. There's just so many really nuanced angles with which to approach a number of different social and economic and foreign policy problems that it's hard to watch a show without having some sort of opinion and becoming intellectually invested.
Mm-hmm. So why didn't somebody pick up on a follow-up for this kind of program, let it go into hiatus for a couple of years and then come up with something new? There's nothing on television that, maybe there is and I just don't watch it, that deals with politics in this fashion.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there is a contemporary analogy. I don't think that anything really does. I mean, you could argue that no one wanted to follow in the West Wing's footsteps. So, I mean, they're maybe taking a breather for a couple of years. I think that any show that would have been on in the immediate aftermath of the West Wing would have immediately been compared to the West Wing and likely failed. The shows that you mentioned in the beginning of this segment, of Veep, for instance, I expect will be completely different take. It's a comedy, and the people who created it also created In the Loop, which is the opposite of the West Wing in that it portrayed Washington as very cynical and people are backstabbing and no one really believes in what they're doing, and Washington is sort of a farce and people are power hungry, and the West Wing wasn't really like that at all. So it's a different take. I don't know of anything that has a similarly very earnest view of Washington that's mm-hmm. currently on the air.
Did you, and this is a smaller audience because it was on HBO, did you see Game Change, the show about Sarah Palin?
I did. I just watched it last night. It was very compelling.
I thought so, too. I thought it was an understated performance in a way, and she was, in some ways, a sympathetic character. I mean, it was a fairly complete portrayal of her. I don't know if she would have liked it.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I felt bad for her. She was sort of plucked out of oblivion, was not asked the right questions by people who are trained to ask the right questions,
right,
and then criticized for underperforming. I felt very bad for her. I mean, at the end, she sort of turned and she did things that made you less sympathetic for her. But it was a very fair portrait of her, I thought. I felt bad for her, and I am not one who I think has ever felt bad for Sarah Palin. So I thought it was a great film.
Why don't we see, maybe we are seeing a few, there must be a lot more people like us, I would think, Julie, in this world who love that kind of drama, be it West Wing or a really well-done movie about politics. Jimmy Stewart goes to Washington, you know, whatever it happens mm-hmm. to be. I love that. Why don't we see more of that in the theater, or maybe I'm just overlooking it? Oh, it seems to me as though it would be a good thing for us to do because it would make us a little more involved in the political process, which is good. We live in a democracy.
Yeah, I guess people turn to television and the movies for escapist entertainment. And I think that right now, especially right now, political rhetoric is so charged and bitter and unpleasant, and the economy is not great, and there are a lot of foreign policy problems. But I think the last thing that people want to see when they go to the movies on a Saturday night is to be reminded of the fact that unemployment is high, or the fact that there are still all these, you know, conflicts overseas. I think that it's hard to do it in a way that's satisfying in an entertainment sense. And I think the reason that the West Wing was able to do what it did is because it was escapist, and in that the president, President Bartlet, was so different from President Bush. I mean, he spoke Latin and he won a Nobel Prize for economics, and he was from New England, and he was a doctor. And, you know, for people that did not like George W. Bush or did not think he was very presidential, there was his complete opposite in President Bartlet. So it was sort of like you could watch it, and it'll almost feel like an alternate history. So I think that, I don't know what an alternate history Obama would be like. I don't quite think it's John McCain. So I think it has less to do with what's going on outside the movies, too.
We'll welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Julie Wiener. She's a contributing writer for Vanity Fair, and she's written a very interesting piece about how West Wing inspired a whole group of young people to become actively involved in politics. We're expanding our show a little bit because the movie, HBO movie about Sarah Palin, debuted on Saturday night on HBO, and we're looking at the influence of television shows, of movies, to inspire people to go into political life. So I'm sure there are many of you who are big West Wing fans. Some of you perhaps saw Game Change, if you'd like to comment on that as well. And we'll continue our phone calls in a moment, a little bit as we pause here, of Game Change, Julianne Moore as Sarah Palin.
Are you 100% committed to going forward with this project?
Absolutely. I have a servant's heart, and if you really think I can help this ticket, if you really think I can help this country, then absolutely, I'll do this with you.
Your private life will be subjected to harsh, often unfair attacks. Nothing can prepare you for how ugly this can be, nothing.
I do understand that. Here's the deal. I went through a tough primary in Alaska, and I know how ugly it can get.
Well, Governor, things can get quite a bit rougher on the national stage.
I don't know. Alaska's pretty rough.
Our next caller is David in Toma. Hi, David.
Hello. I just want to call in. I watched West Wing every year, and I think West Wing did for politics what All in the Family did to show prejudice, and what MASH did to show how people felt about war. And it showed people the way that politics work, how even people who were of the same party, if they didn't like somebody, would make their policies based on their dislike of somebody rather than what it would do for the country. And I think it's a program that everybody should watch. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, David. Julie.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's an interesting comparison to MASH and All in the Family. The shows were a little before my time, so I haven't actually seen them, but I think that a lot of people that I spoke to who are a bit older than I am would certainly agree with that.
Grant in Madison. Hi, Grant.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I've been listening in the car. I actually got hooked on the West Wing as a Peace Corps volunteer. I would sit in my house after school and watch episodes on DVD that my parents had mailed to me.
Where were you? Where were you, a Peace Corps volunteer?
I was in Ghana in West Africa.
Oh.
It was really interesting watching a lot of the, you know, policy issues come up that were actually being dealt with in other places, such as, you know, how the U.S. deals with terrorism. Another series that I got hooked on was Battlestar Galactica, and it actually won the Peabody Award for its portrayal of terrorism and how government responds to a post-terrorist world. It was interesting because, you know, the main protagonist of the series looked exactly like humans and were devotees of a fanatical branch of a religion. I just wanted to bring that up and see if either you or your guest had seen that show.
I haven't seen the show. Julie, have you?
No, I've not seen Battlestar Galactica, although the terrorism plot lines in The West Wing were some of the most interesting, dealing with issues of law and foreign policy and protecting the homeland. They were great.
I would seriously recommend taking a look at the series just because of the way it deals with terrorism. It actually won the Peabody Award for that very issue. So.
And pardon my ignorance here, Grant, but where do we find it?
It's available on Netflix, I believe.
It's not on TV?
On Amazon.com.
It's not on TV now.
No, it was on the Sci-Fi Network from like 2006 to 2009, I believe, 2010.
Okay.
It was a four-series run. It's absolutely fantastic.
Okay. All right. You've convinced me.
All right.
I've been meaning to watch that show for a while. It's an Iraq war parable. Is that right?
I think he's gone.
Oh, okay. I think it's an Iraq War parable. People love that show. I personally have not seen it, but people, a lot of actually people who work in politics love that show.
Thanks, Grant. Jane in Middleton. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm just wondering if either of you have seen The Commander-in-Chief with Gina Davis, and if that was portrayed accurately as well as West Wing.
Julie?
I have not. I really feel like there are some serious gaps in my political entertainment right now. I have not. Should I see it?
Well, I didn't really watch it, but I knew that was on, and I liked Gina Davis, and mm-hmm. I just was wondering if that was fairly accurate. I imagine I could watch it just like I could watch West Wing now that it's off the air.
I didn't think it was as good as West Wing, but I was disappointed when it... I'm a sucker for all of those shows. Give me anything political like that, and I'm watching it every single week. I like her as well. I thought it was interesting. It wasn't as intricate as West Wing, but it sure wasn't on the air very long, was it?
No. That's all I had.
When was it on? It was on recently?
3 years ago, was it? Or four? Time goes so fast. Was it 4 years ago, Jane?
Yeah, it could be that long. But I knew that it was on there, and I didn't know how politically accurate it was, so I just thought
right.
I'd check.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you should check it out, Julie. It's not West Wing, but it was interesting. It was interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Joanne from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you? Glad you're talking about the West Wing. I want to know that I'm an absolute West Wing wing nut. And I have the entire series, and I watch it like I watch an episode maybe every other night. I can even dialogue with the episodes of the West Wing. But in my former job, I had the opportunity to meet Alan Alda, and who played Arnie Vinnick in the campaign episode. And I told Alan Alda that there were wingnuts like me out there who just adored his show, and he was sort of surprised to find out that there were so many people who were so passionate about his show. And I told him that the live episode they did of the debate between he and Matthew Santos, who was played by Jimmy Smith, was a brilliant move to do it live on the East Coast and then, of course, on tape on the West Coast.
Oh, I forgot but about I told, that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I told him he was so convincing that I would have voted for him. That's how good he was.
I think I actually read that he was supposed to win the Alan Alda character, but because the actor playing Leo McGarry died, the show's creators thought that it would be too much of a blow to the audience if Jimmy Smith were to lose the election too. So at the last minute, I think this is what I read, that they changed the plot line.
That's fascinating. And Matthew Santos preceded being the first Hispanic candidate, preceded Barack Obama as the first minority candidate, but if you look at the plot line and the way his campaign went, it practically mirrored Obama's campaign. In fact, if you talk to Alan Sorkin, I think you'll hear that there was some discussion about what sort of strategy should be used in the Obama campaign.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. So you're still watching this show, Joanne?
I watch the show, and I'm going to admit this live and on radio. I watch the show every night, and I watch an episode a night, and sometimes I watch them in order, and sometimes I watch them out of order, but I watch it so much now that I can tell you the dialogue, and a lot of that dialogue, your writer guest may know, came from the Aaron Sorkin movie, The American President.
Right.
And so, the cast members, because the chief of staff in The American President was played by Martin Sheen.
Right.
And the president was played by Michael Douglas. But you can hear lines that were taken directly from that movie and used in The West Wing.
Oh. Well, I'm glad you called in and you were listening. This is your kind of hour. You are the expert on West Wing, Joanne.
I would think that I'm pretty close to it.
I think you are, too. Thank you. You inspired me to watch it more often, too. That's great. Yeah, some people just loved it so much, they're still watching it every day. Thanks, Joanne.
They really do.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I mean, Oh, I was just saying that, you know, the show, as you pointed out, went off the air, you know, several years ago, 6 years ago, I think, at this point. But people right. still feel just as passionately about it as they did when it was first on. They habitually watch it and quote it and invoke it when explaining their political decisions to their friends or colleagues. It still very much resonates.
Yeah, it sure is. Let's hear for a little bit from another episode. This is it's a big block of cheese day. Leo sends grumbling staffers to meet with organizations who were not usually heard from at the White House. And CJ, who's the press secretary, her assignment is the cartographers for social equality.
So, you're probably wondering what all of this has to do with social equality.
No, I'm wondering where France really is.
Guys, we want to thank you very much for coming in.
Hang on, we're going to finish this.
Okay.
What do maps have to do with social equality, you ask?
She asked.
Salvatore Natoli of the National Council for Social Studies argues, in our society, we unconsciously equate size with importance and even power.
I'm going to check in on Toby.
Go.
These guys find Brigadoon on that map, you'll call me, right?
Probably not.
Okay.
When third world countries are misrepresented, they're likely to be valued less. When Mercator maps exaggerate the importance of Western civilization, when the top of the map is given to the northern hemisphere and the bottom is given to the southern, then people will tend to adopt top and bottom attitudes.
But wait, where else could you put the northern hemisphere but on the top?
On the bottom.
How?
Like this.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Why not?
Because it's freaking me out.
That's great. Let's go to Sarah. Hi, Sarah, in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I just couldn't resist once you brought up Battlestar Galactica because I was a big fan of that for a while, and I don't see the parallel with the Iraq War in that show, but now that you brought up, like someone brought up a similarity to the West Wing, it does kind of have a similar vibe to it. But I could answer any question about Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, okay. I have not seen it. This is, but you, as you found that it would probably attract a similar audience as those who also love the West Wing?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised because it has very good writing and intricate plots and political relevance and characterizations, really excellent characterizations, and a lot to think about. Very, very intelligent show.
Hmm.
I think.
Cool.
And it was on the air for how long, Sarah?
Yeah, I watched it on DVD, so I'm trying to remember. I think there were like maybe 5 seasons.
Oh.
4. Yeah, it was what? Maybe only. They had this weird, like, half-season way they would do it. So, like, full seasons, maybe only 4 seasons.
Huh. Well, that's quite a few. Why is it, and maybe there are a lot of shows like this, and I watch a number of them, but when you think about all of the people in Hollywood and New York who are writers, who are really at the top of their craft, they love what they do, they're really good, why don't we get more just splendid shows on television, like West Wing, like the show that you're referencing, Sarah? Why is that? Because a lot of them are just seem stupid to me.
Are you asking me? I wonder that all the time. I don't know.
Why do you think, Julie?
I think TV has been better than movies lately. I really do. I think TV has been wonderful. I think that people who are drawn to teasing out more complex storylines over years instead of just a 2-hour narrative or drawn to television. I can't remember the last movie I saw that I really loved, but a new movie, I mean. But I think that there are episodes of some TV shows every week that I think are small, I don't know, just stand on their own as small, very poignant pieces of art. Parks and Recreation, I think, is so great and so sort of an earnest and sweet-natured and truthful portrayal of small-town government.
Okay.
I think that maybe people sort of missing that West Wing style portrayal of a bunch of civil servants interacting with townspeople and interacting amongst themselves, should check out Parks and Recreation. It doesn't have the sort of fast-talking, high-octane Sorkin dialogue.
Right.
And the stakes aren't as high because it is a small town in Indiana called Pawnee, and they're debating whether to put in a park or not, and someone's running for city council, not president. But I think it's just so great. And a lot of people, you know, calling in have talked about TV shows, Battlestar Galactica and MASH and The Practice, and not movies. I don't know why TV is better than movies. I feel like it has been.
All right. I think your next article should be shows we should watch.
Yeah.
Okay. That are on the air right now. Don't you think? We're out of time. Julie, thank you so much. I'm so glad you wrote this article, and I'm inspired, and so many people will be to watch old West Wing shows. It's just, you've made my season. Thank you. Sarah, thanks so much for your call. It was great fun. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Julie Wiener, our guest, contributing writer for Vanity Fair. Her piece, West Wing Babies, appears in the April 2012 issue of the magazine. Thanks for listening and calling. Great conversations ahead.